Briefing 4. Part 1. Entering the Minneapolis Field. Briefing 4 is where field readiness becomes real. Until now, we have been building the language leaders need to read the field, the nine forces, the worldviews, the organizational functions, and the constellations. In this module, you're going to watch all of them move at once, not in theory, in Minneapolis. In a real city with real people, real institutions, real fear, real authority, real business exposure, and real consequences. We will read Minneapolis through the perceptual intelligence sequence. That sequence is the core reading discipline of this series. It traces how a field event forms. Signal, lens activation, emotional fuel, emotional atmosphere, ripple, constellations, field. In plain terms, it helps leaders see how an event becomes meaning, how meaning becomes emotion, how emotion becomes pressure, and how pressure moves through organizations before anyone has fully named what is happening. That is the discipline underneath field readiness. It helps leaders see what is forming before they act inside it. And in 2026, you will need it, because the field will not always announce itself as a crisis. It may arrive as a routine decision that suddenly carries public meaning. Minneapolis matters because the field was not theoretical there. Federal immigration enforcement entered the city not as a distant policy debate or a campaign issue, but as a visible presence in neighborhoods, near schools, near transit, near workplaces, near businesses, and inside the ordinary spaces of civic life. People were afraid, angry, and trying to protect their communities. Police and local officials struggled to maintain civic stability amid conflicting authority. Parents rushed to schools while workers weighed the safety of their shifts. Small businesses and hotels fought to stay operational, all while citizen journalists filmed and amplified the unfolding reality to the country. No one was standing outside the field. Everyone was inside it, but they were not inside the same reality. That is what makes Minneapolis such an important field study. Everything you learned in briefing 3A about the field was present in Minneapolis. The reason it intensified so quickly is that federal authority entered a local field that did not grant it legitimacy from the beginning. Federal enforcement did not enter empty space. It entered a city with its own civic identity, political commitments, community networks, institutional relationships, and history of organizing. For many residents and local actors, federal enforcement was not experienced as routine law enforcement. It was experienced as intrusion, as threat, and as harm. For federal authorities, the same field looked very different. They were not entering as aggressors in their own understanding. They were entering as agents of lawful authority, restoring order and carrying out national policy. That is where the entanglement began. Not because one side had feelings and the other had facts, but because both sides were operating from different claims about legitimacy, authority, safety, and responsibility. That is the first thing leaders need to perceive. When formal authority enters a field where legitimacy is contested, every action becomes charged before anyone speaks. Entanglement is what happens when a conflict can no longer be contained in the arena where it began. In Minneapolis, the conflict did not stay with federal enforcement. It moved into local and state government, law enforcement, schools, local businesses, the workforce, media, national brands, and ultimately, public trust. Schools closed. Small businesses were disrupted. Property was damaged. Workers were divided between job responsibilities and community loyalties. Residents organized to protect neighbors. Federal agents understood themselves as carrying out lawful duty. Local officials faced pressure to resist, stabilize, or explain. Media turned events into national meaning before local institutions had internal clarity. That is entanglement. A conflict begins in one arena, then travels through relationships, roles, locations, contracts, identities, and institutions, until no one can honestly say, "This has nothing to do with us." The nine forces were not sitting in the background. They were active, Narratives formed faster than correction. Reality itself was contested. Polarization sorted actors into loyalty and betrayal. Emotion moved before facts settled. Boundaries collapsed between public policy and organizational life. Government fractured across federal, state, and local authority. The struggle over governing authority became visible in real time. Institutional distrust shaped how every statement was received. And local events carried reputational consequences far beyond Minneapolis. This is what a field looks like when the forces interact, not one force at a time, but all of them together. The field became hot before most organizations had even named it as a field. In the middle of that larger field, one slice of the story gives leaders a concrete place to look: the hotels. Part two, the hotels. A field reading within the field reading. When federal agents entered the city, they needed lodging, and local hotels had rooms. What began as a standard operational booking quickly escalated into a public crisis. Protests formed around the properties. Inside, workers were caught between reporting for their shifts and facing members of their own communities protesting outside. The conflict reached a tipping point when a national brand terminated a local franchise agreement to distance itself from the controversy. The local property faced a revenue paradox. The federal bookings brought in immediate money, but the resulting protests, cancellations, and brand separation caused devastating long-term reputational and financial damage. The hotels offer an organizational doorway into the field. They let us see the field from the perspective of one industry and the people inside it. They had to make personal, organizational, and community decisions simultaneously, in real time, with no playbook. A front desk manager was not only managing reservations. A general manager was not only protecting occupancy. A worker was not only reporting for a shift. A brand leader was not only protecting reputation. Each was suddenly standing at the intersection of federal authority, community fear, public safety, worker identity, customer pressure, brand exposure, and revenue risk. That is why the Minneapolis hotels matter. They show how a citywide legitimacy conflict becomes operational. A booking becomes more than a booking. A lobby becomes more than a lobby. A shift schedule becomes more than staffing. A cancellation becomes more than a lost customer. A brand relationship becomes more than a sign on the building. The Minneapolis hotels give us a field reading within the larger field reading, a way to see how entanglement moves from civic conflict into organizational life. Part three, what leaders needed to perceive. We aren't looking away from the larger field, but rather into it. Into one place where the larger field became visible to business leaders. We now slow the story down and read it through the perceptual intelligence sequence, not as theory, but as a leadership discipline, because the question is not only what happened to the hotels, but what leaders needed to perceive before the field made their options smaller. Number one, the signal. The sequence begins with the signal. In the larger Minneapolis field, the signal was federal immigration enforcement entering the city. Inside the hotel field, the signal became more specific. Federal agents needed lodging, and hotels had rooms. On paper, that looks like an ordinary operational transaction: a booking, a contract, a room block, a front desk process. But inside a hot field, a booking is not just a booking. It becomes a signal. To federal authorities, the booking was logistics. A lawful operation needed support. Agents needed places to stay, and the work had to continue. To many community members, the same booking meant something entirely different. It meant the hotel was helping make enforcement possible, that the building had become part of the machinery of harm, and that a place of work, lodging, and public service had become connected to fear in the community. To hotel leaders, the booking created a different reality again. Safety, revenue, brand exposure, employee concern, legal uncertainty, and immense public pressure, all at once. Number two, lens activation. The signal was the same, but the meaning of the signal was not shared across worldviews. That is, lens activation. The traditionalist lens read the hotel situation through order, lawful authority, compliance, and national boundary. From that lens, the hotel's role was straightforward. Federal agents were carrying out lawful duties. The organization should not obstruct. The rule of law should be respected, and order should be maintained. The inclusionist lens read the same hotel situation through protection, dignity, belonging, and harm, a perspective amplified by Minneapolis's pride in being an inclusive, multicultural community. From that lens, the hotel was not simply providing lodging. It was enabling an operation that threatened neighbors, workers, families, and communities. The same room reservation activated two different moral realities. One said, support lawful authority. The other said, do not enable harm. That is why the situation became so hard to manage. The hotel was not standing between two opinions. It was standing between two lenses. Number three, dual victimization. The victim and champion lens appeared on both sides. This is one of the most important parts of the field. Federal enforcement actors could experience themselves as the injured party. They were carrying out lawful authority while facing obstruction, protest, and public hostility. They could read resistance as danger, disrespect, and attack. At the same time, residents and advocacy groups could experience themselves as the victim champions and the true injured party. They saw families at risk, neighbors under threat, communities targeted, and institutions enabling harm. They read enforcement as danger, intimidation, and attack. That is dual victimization. Both sides believed they were protecting against injury. Both sides believed the other side was escalating. And both sides believed their own actions were defensive. In that condition, every move by the other side becomes proof. Proof that order is under attack, or proof that the community is under attack. Proof that enforcement must continue, or proof that resistance must intensify. That is how a field heats. Number four, emotional fuel. Now, let's move to the emotional fuel. Under the traditionalist lens, the fuel was patriotic and professional duty, order, control, commitment to law, and perceived disrespect when authority was challenged. Under the inclusionist lens, the fuel was fear, anger, solidarity, protection, and urgency. Inside the hotels, another layer of fuel appeared. Workers carried anxiety, fear, exhaustion, divided loyalties, and concern for their families, neighbors, and communities. Some carried support for law enforcement and frustration at the protests. Managers carried safety concerns, staffing pressure, revenue pressure, and the dread of making the wrong call in public. Executives carried reputational risk, legal uncertainty, investor concern, government pressure, and the fear that any move would be read as alignment with one side or betrayal of the other. That is emotional fuel. Not mood, not noise, fuel. It is the energy that makes action more likely, makes interpretation sharper, and makes people less patient, less trusting, and less willing to grant the benefit of the doubt. Two people died during federal enforcement encounters in the community. That fact cannot be treated as background. It changed the emotional atmosphere of the entire field. For many residents, this was no longer only about policy enforcement or legality. It was about fear, grief, protection, and whether their community was safe. For federal authorities and supporters of enforcement, the same moment could be read through a different frame. Danger, disorder, obstruction, and the risks of carrying out lawful authority in a hostile field. That is what made the field so volatile. The deaths did not create the conflict from nothing, but they intensified a field that was already hot and made neutrality even harder to sustain. Number five, emotional atmosphere. Once that emotional fuel entered the same space, it created an emotional atmosphere. The atmosphere around the hotels was hot, morally charged, suspicious, protective, defensive, and intolerant of neutrality. That matters because leaders do not make decisions in empty space. They make decisions inside an atmosphere. In a cool atmosphere, a hotel booking might remain a booking. In a hot atmosphere, the same booking becomes a moral signal. In a cool atmosphere, a cancellation might be handled as a customer service issue. In a hot atmosphere, the same cancellation becomes a political act. In a cool atmosphere, silence might buy time. In a hot atmosphere, silence becomes a statement. That is what the hotel leaders were facing. Not simply operational complexity, but atmospheric pressure. The atmosphere determined how every action would land before the action was even taken. Number 6, ripple. The signal did not move through one function, it moved through all of them. Legal had to ask, what are we required to do? What are we prohibited from doing? What happens when federal authority, local pressure, employee safety, and brand risk point in different directions? HR had to ask, how do we hold a workforce together when some employees support enforcement? Some are devastated by it, and some may be directly connected to the communities affected. Operations had to ask, can we keep the building open? Can employees get to work? Are guests safe? Are protesters outside? Are cancellations rising? Are federal bookings increasing? What does tomorrow's operating environment even look like? Communications had to ask, what do we say when the story has already formed and internal alignment does not yet exist? Public affairs had to ask, which authority do we recognize? Federal, state, local, community, and what does it cost to appear aligned with any one of them? Brand had to ask, is the brand the shield or the target? Is this a local property issue or a national brand event? And how quickly can one local decision scale into national consequence? The C-suite had to ask, what does leadership look like when every function is seeing a different crisis? The board had to ask, what is our responsibility here? Fiduciary responsibility, community responsibility, employee responsibility, public responsibility. And have we ever actually defined how those responsibilities should be weighed when they collide? One signal, 8 operating realities, all moving at the same time. No single decision could resolve all of them, and no one function could perceive the whole field alone. Number 7, constellations. A constellation is not just a stakeholder group. A stakeholder group is usually defined by relationship to the organization: employees, customers, regulators, investors, community members. A constellation is different. It is a system of actors who begin moving around a shared emotional meaning. They may not formally know one another. They may not be coordinated. They may not even agree on every detail. But they are activated by the same interpretation of what is happening. They begin to share language, amplify the same stories, reward the same actions, punish the same signals, and pressure the same targets. That is what makes a constellation powerful. It does not need a formal structure to move. It moves because meaning has synchronized. In Minneapolis, several constellations formed: a community protection constellation, residents, advocacy organizations, workers, local leaders, and supporters moving around the meaning of protection. Defend neighbors, stop harm, do not cooperate, do not normalize enforcement. A law and order constellation: federal agencies, supporters of enforcement, political actors, and members of the public moving around the meaning of authority. Enforce the law, restore order, do not allow obstruction, protect the national boundary. A media amplification constellation: local reporters, national outlets, citizen journalists, social platforms, and political commentators, shaping what the country saw and what the country believed. A workforce safety constellation: employees, managers, unions, HR leaders, families, and community members moving around questions of fear, safety, work, identity, and protection. A brand risk constellation: owners, franchise leaders, customers, investors, legal teams, public affairs teams, and national brand leaders moving around exposure. What does this decision mean? Who will react? Who will punish us? Who will accuse us? Who will leave? Who will demand that we act? None of these constellations needed to coordinate with each other. They synchronized around meaning: protection, order, harm, authority, complicity, courage, safety, and betrayal. Once those constellations formed, the hotel was no longer managing one stakeholder problem. It was standing inside multiple emotional systems at once. Number 8, field. We end with the field. That is what remains when the signal has moved through lenses, fuel, atmosphere, ripples, and constellations. In Minneapolis, the field remained in employee memory, community trust, brand damage, legal exposure, and the fractured relationships between civic, government, and organizational authority. In 2026, leaders need to perceive the whole sequence: signal, lens activation, emotional fuel, emotional atmosphere, ripple, constellations, field, and the perceptual intelligence discipline can help. It gives leaders a discipline to see what is forming before the field fully arrives. By the time every actor is already moving, the leader's options are smaller. The story has momentum. The atmosphere has heat. The constellations have formed, and the ripples have begun. At that point, the organization is no longer deciding whether to enter the field. It is deciding what kind of actor it will be inside a field already in motion. The 2026 field is already in motion. Part 4, where is your lobby? By now, the question should no longer be, could this exact thing happen to us? The better question is, where is our doorway? Minneapolis is not only a past event, it is a field still in motion. And that is why this briefing matters before we move to the 3 scenarios. The question is not whether your organization will face the exact same issue. It probably will not. The question is whether your organization has its own version of the lobby, a place where the field could arrive before anyone has decided it is a crisis. It might be a physical location, a campus, a hospital, a store, a hotel, a warehouse, a distribution center, or a branch office open to the public, a government contract or a vendor relationship, a grant, a franchise agreement, a technology platform, a data system, or a supply chain relationship, a workforce that is also a community, employees who are also parents, neighbors, immigrants, veterans, activists, and customers. People do not leave the field outside when they come to work. A brand relationship, sponsorship, silence, or public statement. A relationship that once seemed ordinary but now carries symbolic weight. That is your lobby. It is not always a literal lobby, but the doorway where a larger public conflict could enter organizational life. The leadership task is to find it before the field does. So ask yourself, where could this happen to us? Through which relationship, location, contract, workforce, platform, or affiliation? Which part of our organization could become symbolic space? Which ordinary operation could suddenly carry public meaning? And if the field entered tomorrow, who would coordinate the response? Not in theory, but in practice. Whose job is it to hold legal, HR, operations, communications, public affairs, brand, the C-suite, and the board together at the same time? Can you name that person? Do they know it is their job? Do they have the authority to act? Do they have the relationships to coordinate? Do they understand the field well enough to know what they are coordinating? That question has a practical answer, or it does not. And if it does not, that is not simply a communication gap or a crisis plan gap. It is an organizational readiness gap. The organizations that navigate 2026 most effectively will not be the ones that respond the fastest. They will be the ones that did the thinking before the pressure arrived. They understood what they stood for. They had enough relationship trust inside the organization to coordinate across functions. And they understood that no single function could read the whole field alone. The goal is not to predict every possible crisis or to script every possible statement, but to build the capacity to read the field before acting inside it. Because when the field arrives, speed without perception can escalate the crisis. Silence without perception can become a signal. Compliance without perception can be read as complicity. Values without preparation can become performance, and neutrality without field awareness can be experienced as abandonment. That is why preparation matters. The abstract becomes operational faster than most organizations expect. Minneapolis shows how quickly social pressure, government authority, public emotion, and organizational exposure can collide. Leaders who study the pattern before their own organization is activated do not have to learn it for the first time under pressure. In the next briefing, we move from one live field to three possible election environments: stabilized, contested, and systemic crisis. You now know how to read a field. Now we will ask what kind of field November 2026 may produce, and what your organization needs to be ready to do inside each one.